We just put all of our money, our savings into this platform, and I found out I was pregnant.
Entrepreneurship is a roller coaster full of risks and surprises. But what do you do when you're pregnant, have invested everything into a new app, and you're facing the unexpected?
I can't change who I am. I can't change my sex. I can't change that I'm going to be a mother. There's so many uncertainties, and that baby wasn't planned. I'm here. I'm going to own it, and we will get through it.
In this powerful conversation, Kim shares her incredible journey.
I was raising funds for my company, and I had an investor that wanted to officially lead our next round. And we had been doing a lot of the conversations through like Zoom or online. They said, come on in. We want to present a term sheet. You know, we're ready to move forward. And so I was all excited. Well, the term on the table was like, I think it was like $4.5 million or $5 million cap, calls me the next week. And he said, Kim, we decided that the valuation is going to be, it was like $1 million less. What happened? We have been crushing goals. We've been doing all the things that we said. He's like, wow, we did take into consideration your life event. The life event that I just put every penny of our savings. At the time, I was like broken. I'm like, what are we going to do now? We have like $6,000 left.
Defying biases and breaking barriers in the startup world.
A kind of a mind-blowing time because my first thought was, is this legal?
Kim Gomez, wonderful to have you here on the Ginny Show with me. Can you share a moment in your entrepreneurial journey where you had to dig deep because the odds were stacked against you?
It was back 2016. I had an idea for an app and I convinced my husband to sell our business, our restaurant, and to invest all of that money into this app. I just knew it was going to be something magical. And at the same time, so we just put all of our money, our savings into this platform, and I found out I was pregnant. The plan was to invest this money and then to raise outside investment. And I knew I was just a girl from Michigan raising outside capital for a platform that was targeted to the Hispanic market. And I knew I was already up against all these odds. And then I had to do it with a baby bump. At that time, I'm like, well, I can't change this. I can't change who I am. I can't change my sex. I can't change that I'm going to be a mother. And so I just looked to see who wouldn't judge me on, you know, the baby bump. And I just took it from there. But yeah, there's so many uncertainties and that baby wasn't planned. And so I'm here, I'm going to own it and we will get through it.
The mindset that you went to straight away was, I'm just a girl from Michigan. How often does that story come up in your mind, in your entrepreneurial journey, even today?
Honestly, never even taken my sex into consideration. My very first business, I was so naive. I was 20. My husband and I got married, had a baby, and opened a bar of all things, a Mexican restaurant with a bar at 20 years old. And so I didn't know what it was like to like think inside the box. I didn't know like the stigma around, you know, entrepreneurship or female entrepreneurs. I didn't know any of that. And so I just really leaned into my customers, really leaned into, you know, my staff, and that we use that same model throughout all of the other businesses that we started. But it was different when I was relying on funding or opportunities from someone else that I had no control over. And so that was just different for me. And it was just tough to try to like think through that and be like, I can't control this. I can't control what they're thinking about me just by knowing that I'm pregnant. I can't change this. It's kind of a helpless feeling, but at the same time, I was going to do it with or without them.
Am I correct in hearing that you experience some of the biases when you went to look for funding? Can you kind of expand a little bit more on that experience for you? Like, did you have to pause and be like, oh, yo, you said that you can control things, but how did you move forward in that space?
Is it okay if I tell a story?
Yeah, please do. We love stories here.
Good.
Yeah.
So I won't use any names, but I was raising funds for my company. And I had already had some investors come in. We already had some great traction. And I had an investor that wanted to officially lead our next round. And we had been doing a lot of the conversations through like Zoom or online. And they said, come on in. We want to present a term sheet. You know, we're ready to move forward. And so I was all excited, went, met the managing director. And he didn't quite present the term sheet. He said, you know, I have to finish up a couple of things. I'll get back to you. Well, the term on the table was like, I think it was like $4.5 million or $5 million cap or something. I don't know, some type of term. Well, they came back and he calls me the next week and he said, Kim, we decided that the valuation is going to be, it was like $1 million less. And I said, what happened? We have been crushing goals. We've been doing all the things that we said. And he's like, wow, we did take into consideration your life event. And I was like, what life event? The life event that I just put every penny of our savings. We gave up our nest egg, as in the restaurant that we knew we could get a salary and income from, to like pour into this new venture. And at the time I was like broken. I'm like, what are we going to do now? We have like $6,000 left. I ended up not accepting that term sheet. And then at that time I pivoted to, I need to get into front of funds that are funding female founders. I need to get outside of this area and speak to investors who understand this problem that we're solving. And it just was like a complete mind shift, but I was determined and I ended up doing that. But yeah, it was crazy.
So the life event they were referring to was the baby, and that was like their sole focus.
Yes.
Wow. It also makes me think too, as a fellow entrepreneur, that there is a level of resourcefulness I feel that female entrepreneurs have to come to the table with, based on these prejudices or biases that we receive.
It was crazy. I mean, it was just a kind of a mind-blowing time, because my first thought was, is this legal? And it's like, yes, it is. They can do whatever they want with their money. They can ask you about anything. And so, and I just kept saying, like, even when they said, I said, would you have done that to like a man that walked in the room? Because I know, and this isn't my first rodeo. I have 5 kids. Like, this is my 5th child, which again, and that they were like, whoa, now she really can't handle the thing. I'm like, no, when I have a new baby, I actually handle it pretty well. Now I ask my husband, he's a hot mess, but you wouldn't have asked him if he was pitching like the company. But all of a sudden I'm devalued because I'm having a child.
That's insane. Have you experienced other prejudices like that before, Kim, in other areas of your life?
So my last company was for quinceañeras. It was a marketplace for Hispanic celebrations. So my husband's from Mexico, saw this need. You know, I was helping my niece plan her quinceañera. But here I am, a 6-foot-tall white girl from Michigan with a quinceañera planning app. So I initially got some pushback, like, who are you to say what is trending and hot in the quinceañera world? But I soon just kind of owned the role. And I own the whole, like, yes, I know I'm a 6-foot-tall white woman from Michigan, but I am an expert in this. Just kind of like owning my faults. You know, I always say, this is what I know, this is what I don't know, and this is how I'm going to get there. And that was one of the things, like, I know I'm not part of this culture, but what I do know is I love it. I've been married in the culture for the last 20 years. I understand how things are planned, and we're going to build this amazing platform for families to continue to keep these traditions alive. Anyway, but that's kind of how I go against, like, every kind of pushback is like, this is what I know, this is what I don't know, but this is how I'm going to get there. And then you kind of own the conversation.
Where did your entrepreneurial spirit come from?
It was funny because in school, I had the traditional jobs in mind. I was going to be a nurse or a teacher. And then I was like, no, I'm going to cut hair. But when I graduated from high school, my parents were real estate investors and they owned their own brokerage. And when I graduated, I got around $2,000 in cash gifts for my graduation. And my dad said, you could actually take that money and invest, put a down payment on a rental property. And I was like, well, that'd be hot. That's like way sexier than like a designer bag or some trip or something. Like, I want to own real estate. How amazing would that be? So I put a down payment on my first rental property when I was 18 years old. But I didn't know that's like what normal 18-year-old kids, I didn't know that's what they didn't do. Like, I just thought everybody did that. You know, I didn't know any different. And so I feel like I've always, you know, my parents didn't work normal hours. They didn't have that like 9-to-5. There were real estate salesmen. So they were, you know, working all kinds of crazy hours with different tactics and being personable. And I don't know, I think I got it from them. But I just really love, like, with our first, like I told you, our first business was a restaurant. And I just really leaned into customers. And it was like, the customers will tell you what they want if you just let them talk. And so I just really love doing that. Like, oh, what are the new trending things? How can I incorporate that in my business? And it wasn't a fear of failing. It was a fear of missing out. I wanted to be the first one to try something because what if it worked? I don't have that fear of like, what if it fails? Because I actually kind of hope it does so then I can move on to the next thing, but which sounds absolutely crazy. But I'm actually terrified of like, what if it works? Like, am I the right person for this role?
Is that an imposter syndrome thing? Or is that like, whoa, this is a bigger vision than I ever imagined it to be?
I feel like I'm really good at marketing and the whole customer discovery and understanding your customer and growing teams. But in industry specific, for example, when you have the restaurants, I'm like, I don't even know how to turn on the fryers. I don't even know how to make the salsa. Like, I don't know how to do these things, but that's okay. So it's really like, yeah, we'll get through it. But it was just that fear of like, am I the right person? Like, I don't even know how to do these very basic things of my business. For example, the quinceañera planning app, I was a non-technical co-founder. how was I positioned to grow this app to, we ended up having like 3 million users. Like, was I the right person? And so there's always kind of that doubt because I maybe don't have like the industry or market knowledge, but the core parts of growing a business, I think I'm really good at.
Absolutely. Because you bring it back to the customer, right? And I think nowadays with businesses focusing so much on scale and growth, that initial element of what does a customer actually want, need, require, is missing, is kind of overlooked or skated over really quickly.
Yeah. I talk to so many founders and it's just dig a little deeper. You ask them a question and they give you a great answer. And then just ask why, or like, how did you find that? Or why do you say that? Or, oh, you like this thing. What flavor, or where did you buy, or how much did you pay for? Like, just dig a little bit deeper and then like gold will appear. I mean, it's crazy. Just let them talk. Stop talking about what you offer, what your big feature is. Listen to them and they're going to tell you exactly what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious too, your amazing skill of listening. I always tell people, I think that's the best skill podcasters need to have. Just listen and the gold will come in the same way customers tell you. Being so innovative, Kim, you've got a reputation for innovative thinking. What do you think is the key to staying ahead of the curve? And how do you foster that culture of innovation in your team?
It's just always keeping your eyes open, whether it's something that's trending, or maybe it's trending in a completely different industry, but then say, could this actually work for what we're doing or for what we're building? So just always keeping your eyes and ears open for opportunities for you to grow. I tell that to my team, like, try not to put up those barriers of like, we can't do this because of why. Well, why can't we? Like, if those barriers were removed, could we do it? And what does it look like?
Who's an entrepreneur that's inspired you? You're giving me Sarah Blakely vibes.
She is right up there. Yeah, she is. Oh gosh, I lost her name, but the founder of Poopery, mainly because I use it. I have 5 kids, married to a Mexican man, the spray, poop spray, toilet spray.
I've used it too, but I don't know who is the founder. Let me Google it while you're talking about her.
Growing a great product in an industry that nobody really wants to talk about, but is a big need, and growing it. And she had like, I don't know if she still has, 100% equity, but something just like, I don't need anyone else to do this. I could do this on my own is so empowering. So
Susie Bates.
Yeah.
So she kind of is similar to you in that tenacity of, I can do this myself. And even when you were given that evaluation, you're like, you know what? I don't need you. I can look for other resources. Given that mentality, and I think like what I love about that, Kim, too, is that one, we talked about resourcefulness, but it's the, now that we have, because of women like you, we are able to have that option to look at other resources. 50 years ago, our grandmothers, our mothers, they didn't have the option to even file for a credit card, right? But now we can be like, okay, there are other funds available. How important do you think it is for women to be at the table in these decisions? Because it's not just entrepreneurship, it's also healthcare.
I mean, it's so important to have a woman at the table. I don't know the exact percentage. I'm going to say 50%, of the population is women, just because I'm just going to pull that out of my butt. But we should have a voice. You know, I'm even looking like currently at like Soberish, my current company. And there's so many women that are like, oh, you know, these type of products have helped with like premenopause and menopause. And I'm like, really? But why isn't anybody really talking about that on social media? I'm like, mainly because it's for women who are past their like entrepreneur age to help solve problems. Men definitely don't care. And at that point, like women are like, I just don't have a voice. What could I do? So part of me now is like, what can I do for my future self when I go through menopause? Is there anything I can do right now to help that? So we totally need a voice. And I don't know how to go into it, but we need a voice. Part of me with being a female founder is, I actually hate saying I'm a female founder, if that makes sense. I just want to be a founder, period.
It's like with gay marriage, when people like, it's not a gay car park.
Yep. I don't want a label. I just want to be a great founder.
Yeah, exactly. So, speaking of you being a great leader and a great founder, I want to talk about Soberish. Talk me through how you came up with such a product.
So I've told you a little bit about the app that we started. It grew from an idea to over 3 million users in 5 years. And, you know, when I was growing that app, I'd come home like after a long day of work and I'd have a cocktail or a glass of wine to take the edge off. Well, in 2022, that company was acquired. And around the same time, my mom moved in with us because my mom struggles with alcoholism. I was like, you know, I should be like relaxing and doing all these things, but, you know, and maybe having more wine or more tequila to relax. And it was like, no, maybe we should try some other options. There's all these non-alcoholic alternatives. But I'm like, well, that's not exactly fun. I like the fun associated with alcohol too. And so I'm like, Mom, there's all these products that say they could actually give you a buzz without the booze. And so we just started exploring these new products. I was not looking for a business. Thought it'd be fun to start posting on social media our reviews. Cause I'm like, this will be a fun like hobby with my mom to like just go on and like be like, this tastes like garbage or whatever. And so we started doing these video reviews. Brands started reaching out for us to try their product. We had a couple videos go viral and I was like, oh my God, Mom, we're like influencers. This is like the best side gig ever. Like we're getting free product, you know, whatever. And then like with my tech background now, it was last August, I was like, I'm going to put up a landing page to see actually what kind of sales we're giving to these brands. And so we were tracking conversions and we ended up generating over $60,000 in sales for those brands in 1 month. And I was like, well, holy shit, this is not a hobby. This could actually be a business. And so I convinced my husband to let me go do my thing again. So he's like, go. Be busy. You're not a working mother when your brain is occupied. So built what is now soberish.com. So we're a marketplace for all things soberish. So we have, you know, products from non-alcoholic wines through hemp-infused spirits and seltzers and what have you. Then I was like, now that I've explored this market, like I really want a couple of these products to exist. And so now I'm kind of just poking in some holes of products that I think should exist. And we're launching our own product line. So we have a couple products in the market now that have been doing really well. But again, just kind of like the fear of missing out. I want to see these products exist. What's the worst thing that can happen? They can fail and I'll go back to exactly where I'm at. So I want to try.
I love that you did this with your mom. And I've got to ask, how has your relationship with your mom been impacted by this journey of soberish?
My mom and I have always been really close. I know people say like, my mom's my best friend. My mom is my best friend. But there were many years that I felt like the parent because of her relationship with alcohol. But now she's back to being, you know, just kind of my best friend. But also it's really fun. Like, it's just fun. Like we goof off. Like we try these hemp-derived beverages, which have hemp-derived THC. And so we get a little bit stony baloney, which is just like a microdose, like microbuzz. Like we're not doing anything crazy. I call it the giggle grass online because my mom and I literally turn into raging hyenas. And so it is like comical and fun. And it's like the best part of our day. But with that being said, my mom, when we used to be invited to weddings or graduations or any sort of party where there's typically like alcohol associated with it, she wouldn't go. Or if she did, she'd go and quickly want to go home. And now because she can actually have something in her hand, whether it's one of our soberish drinks or just a non-alcoholic drink, she feels confident to go to these parties. And so it's just been kind of, you know, outside of just our relationship, actually bringing her into the fold of like soberish, what it actually means to be soberish. It's just been really wonderful.
In a way, she's been included more in certain aspects of your life. Cause you said growing up, she kind of shied away from it.
Yeah. I mean, and it was mainly because she just didn't want to have to answer, you know, to like, oh, or have that like stigma of, oh, she's an alcoholic. That's why she's not drinking. And so she's like, I don't want that to be my label.
How did that stigma impact you? I had a mom who had mental illness and I know how that stigma impacted me, but how did the stigma of her being an alcoholic impact you?
Well, both my parents, honestly, had a bad relationship with alcohol. It didn't hurt me, I don't think. I think, you know, I'm very cautious of how people act in public and kind of being judged. And I also think that comes from being like an entrepreneur or founder. You're always being looked at. I always said, like, God forbid something happened to me, it would be like on the front page of the paper because I'm like known in my town. And so just being mindful of the way you act and your persona, I mean, it just like is carried with you.
Yeah. Sorry. My cat decided to join in on the conversation. I think he wants to be soberish as well.
Soberish. He just can't have the hemp-derived THC probably. Yeah,
I think so too. Thanks, George. I want to kind of go back to what you said about, you know, your husband's like, go off and do your thing. I recently got married.
I can't hear you.
I think George muted. Yeah, I think he muted me. Thanks, George. Wow. Okay. That's lovely. Before, Kim, you talked about your husband being super supportive of your entrepreneurial adventures. Recently, I got married And every single entrepreneurial roller coaster you go through as an entrepreneur, your spouse rides that with you in some way, shape, or form. Emotionally, financially, mentally, they'll ride that with you. What tips would you have for people getting married to look for in a partner, especially if you're going on that entrepreneurial roller coaster ride?
That's such a loaded question, but first, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Second, it's hard because there's so many things where you can say like, oh, look for this in your like dream partner. But truth be told, you know, I have the cutest, not so tall Mexican husband that I would have never thought would be the yin to my yang. We are polar opposites. And he's not, I mean, he loves the businesses and he's helpful, but he is not this like visionary thinker. He is more the tactical. I used to say in our restaurants, I was the brains, he was the hands, which kind of sounds terrible. But really, like I was like, oh, we should do all this. And then he actually made the thing happen. And so I don't know, just somebody who can keep you in check, somebody who's a good listener. Like sometimes I just want to vent and he doesn't maybe understand it, especially like on the tech side. I'll be like, oh, this thing doesn't work. And instead of him saying like, I don't understand any of that, he just listens. You know, just somebody who's a good listener, who can be supportive. Also, like who can give feedback. I don't know if, have you ever read The Mom Test?
The book? No.
It's just a book about how like when you're creating a platform or a business, you don't want people to tell you your baby's beautiful. I mean, hopefully they do, but you really want people to be like, your baby's ugly. Your baby has two like short arms, you know, whatever, like you need that. And so on the flip side, if you're going to ask for that hard feedback from your partner, you have to be able to get it as well. Cause sometimes you don't want that. But for me, I am completely open and we like to talk through things. And so just being very open-minded about feedback and about when you're talking about work, cause when you have your own business, it's so personal. It is your baby. And so try not to like take that as in like, he did just call your baby ugly. So
on that note too, Kim, I'm curious about you having founded and sold businesses the way that you have over the years. How do you prioritize your time each day? You've got a family, you've got thriving businesses, you're going on live having the grass giggles with your mom. How do you prioritize everything?
I keep a really good calendar. I even just block out time. Like today I have like a 2-hour block of it says work. Like, and then I have in the notes, everything I better get done during that 2 hours. And it's just like being really good about time management. But then like when one of the kids are sick and I'm like, I did not have you on my schedule. But it's just also just having an amazing team like support you. So for example, I had some meetings run over and I was like, and I'm working from home today. And I'm like, I don't have my microphone. So I'm like, hey, Kenzie, do me a solid, bring me my mic. You know, just having that great support system around you to help you, whether it's emotional support, actually growing the business, but just also, it sounds so silly, but like keeping a really good calendar and just being focused and focus on things that matter now. Myself included, but I talk to a lot of founders that are trying to boil the ocean. They're like, oh, my business, I could do this, 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 and this. And I'm like, have you boiled your cup of water? Like, are you doing the one thing really well? Boil your cup of water. Then let's move to a bowl. Then let's move to a bathtub. Then try to boil the swimming pool. Maybe one day we might touch the ocean. But right now, like, we're not even boiling the cup of water. And so, like, it's funny because I'll, like, mentor companies. And then I'll be talking to my team. And I'm like, wait a minute. We're trying to boil the ocean. Let's just boil the cup of water. So to kind of, like, reel it back and focus on things that are really important right now.
You mentioned having a great team. What is the number one skill you hire for in a team member?
It's hard at the stage of the company. So if you're like a young startup and there's only like 4 of you or 3 of you, everyone needs to feel like they're a founder. The whole, I only work from 9 to 5, but maybe I'm not even working during that time because we know Kim's brain is off working at like 10 o'clock at night and is sending messages. I need someone to not necessarily work a million hours a day or a week, but that can keep their mind open to grow the company. So even after hours that they're like, oh, I thought about this, send an email. Or, oh, like, oh, I'm going to make a note. That they're also thinking kind of similar to like a founder. Like, oh, in my role, we should be doing this or we should be testing this. Or like A-B testing or killing an idea that was bad. Not just like, oh, Kim told me to do this, so we're going to do that. They have to own their role, but also be willing to like experiment.
I 100% agree too. Because the quicker you test things, that, you know, circle of iteration, the quicker you get to the answer faster than your competitors. And you, to your point, you know what works and what doesn't. Kim, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.